Okay.
Tonight is Art, the second day of Aseres Meitshuva, aside from Rosh Hashanah, Motzoi Tzom Adalia. Clearly, there are many things that we have to do, a lot of learning, a lot of introspection. But Shalom Bayis is something which is so important that it's worthwhile taking time to discuss, even from busy schedules during Aseres Meitshuva, because that's one of the important things to think about when we're doing teshuva. It's not a coincidence that tonight is Motzoi Tzom Adalia. Tzom Adalia, perhaps more than any other time, this drives home the fact that we know that one of the batim was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, but we see from the history of Tzom Adalia how important it was, even within Klal Yisrael, how negative Rachman al-Tzlan infighting was within Klal Yisrael. Adalia was murdered not by someone from the outside, but Nebuch, a person from Klal Yisrael, that drives home the point how Shalom, the fact that within Klal Yisrael, to have not only people that are coexisting, people that are coexisting with understanding of each other, is such a central part, not only of our existence, but of Klal Yisrael for Dori Doros. So tonight, Be'ez Hashem, as we discuss the Inyanim of Shalom Bayis part 2, we should be zoche to be misaken a little bit the chait that Klal Yisrael unfortunately had during the times of Gedalia, and be zoche to not only have a Gemar Chesima Tov, but also to see the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, Be'ez Hashem. Obviously, Shalom Bayis is something which is hard to discuss in two discussions, even if they're each an hour long. So we're going to just touch on some topics like we did last week, just to perhaps get our feet wet a little bit to be able to understand some of the aspects of Shalom Bayis a little bit better. And this could really be a forum for a discussion in the future with me, with other people. But tonight we're going to just talk about Rashi Prakim and some of the ideas that are essential to building any bias. Neman Lashem Utarosa. We mentioned last week that there's no such thing as a perfect marriage. Marriages are made in heaven, matches are made in heaven, but marriages are made here on earth. And part of that means that it's important to be able to coexist with a person who's not always like you. No two people are exactly the same, and it's important to acknowledge that in a marriage. One of the ways that we classify different personality traits in halacha is with a midah. We talk about different midos that people have. And often, one spouse's midah, your wife's midos, your kala's midos, your future wife's midos, might be different than your midos. And often they're a little bit hard to deal with, which is one of the nisyonos of marriage, one of the nisyonos of Shalom Bayis. When that's true, sometimes a helpful trick, a technique, to dealing with people that might have midos which are slightly different than that you appreciate yourself, is to reframe. What's reframing? It's not a halakhic term, it's a psychological term. In psychology, they talk about reframing. When you have a picture that you buy, let's say you go to Sotheby's and you buy a picture which is worth $1 million. But this picture looks like a piece of garbage because it's in a junky frame. Often, in order to appreciate the picture, what do you have to do? Reframe the picture. When you reframe the picture, you put it in a different perspective, then you appreciate the Mashiyeshba, not just the kantan. So if you're mistaka the kantan, it helps you understand, helps you appreciate the picture as well. And that's true with many things in life, including midos. Often, when someone has a mida which is slightly madruna, mida which is not up to par, on the standards that you would necessarily like, it could be the flip side of a mida you really do appreciate. For example, if a husband is oblivious to things going on at home. He's oblivious to the fact that the house has to be cleaned. He's oblivious to the fact that the kids are crying. He has to run out tonight's later, come 8 o'clock or 8:30, no matter what. That might be something which is negative. The wife might not appreciate that. But that very same midah is the flip side of the fact that he's very conscientious, the reason he's already a Talmud Chacham. That same midah of being focused, of being considerate, of being a masmid, of being a person who really has a total goal in mind of growing in Avodas Hashem, might sometimes come across as being inconsiderate. It's not that we're making an excuse for being inconsiderate, but it's important to realize that if you reframe it, there's a lot of positive in that very same midah. And step one to realizing the positive sides of a midah which might be somewhat maduna is to appreciate the fact that there are definitely milos to that same very same midah. Step number two is to discuss it. On the other hand, since what bothers you is the negative aspect of a midah, it's important to discuss that. As we mentioned last week, discussion means having an open discussion, letting the husband express what bothers him, having the wife listen before she responds, listen and understand what he's saying. Before then, she responds in kind, being able to bring up previous things in their history, which might make them see things from a different approach. So it's very important to discuss it, which is step two in dealing with the midah, which is not necessarily so ideal. But that often is helped when it's in the context of reframing, of realizing the positive attributes, the flip side of the very same coin of the midah which bothers you. Also, it's important to acknowledge that sometimes, Shel Sansa pointed out, it's harder to change one midah than to learn Shas. And despite the reframing, despite the discussions, despite the give and take, it might be that there's no change that's noticed. It's not necessarily because the person doesn't want to, but because it's very, very hard to change a midah. And the hakara, like you mentioned last week with Machlokas, the very fact that a person should have the expectations that machlokas exist in marriage is helpful. Who had been here when dealing with a midah, which might be less than par, it's important to be makar that it can't always be changed overnight, or over 5 years, or over 10 years. Especially if that very same midah has mileage to it, it's even harder to split hairs in a midah. So part of reframing, part of discussion, is also the hakara that it can't always be true that the midah will be fixed, because sometimes you have to take the good with the bad, sometimes it's going to exist, both sides at the same time will exist. In fact, part of any marriage is not always deciding that the person that I married is supposed to fit into a certain mold. Because if a person has a specific ideal mold in his head or her head, and that's the mold that the person is supposed to fit into, that's not going to be a marriage that's so IAI. Part of an important part of marriage is knowing what to pick to enhance and what to say, okay, kacha, since every person has different faces, as we mentioned, parts of pain are different, and their midos themselves are different, their personality is different. It's important to know what to highlight that you want to change, and what to say, okay, kach, I'll keep the same, be mavro midosa. Mavro midosa doesn't mean you have to not be a captain in anything, but at least in certain things, you can be mavro midosecha, to try to say, you know, I'll keep that as it is, and there's something else which bothers me more that I think is worth changing. Not everything is necessarily discussed and change. Some things reframing themselves are important. Some things they don't even reframe. Just say, kacha, kacha, and move on. Because no person's going to be perfect, ever. Just as an aside on the idea of neatness, for example, another example could be if a husband is very neat, so he's very mathed, the apartment should also be very tidy. And it gets the wife frustrated. She can't keep the apartment tidy all the time. She's busy at work, and if they have kids, they're busy. The kids always make the house messy. And it's very hard for the wife after a long day to always clean up the apartment. So she gets frustrated that the husband requests that the apartment be clean. Now, one of the things that attracted him to her when they were going out was the fact that he's a very tidy person. So the fact that he's mapping on the apartment being so tidy is really part of the midah, which is a maila, that he's so tidy. He's always so kempt. It just happens to be that this is a manifestation which for her is not so ideal, but it's important to acknowledge it as such and deal with it from that. Often, though, that example being put aside, usually it's the wife who's more makbid on the tidiness of the house. And this is for a very basic reason. We have the Gemara already. The Amoraim tell us, "Miyami lo trasi ishti ishti ella beisi." The house, both in our society, in the secular society, and in Chazal, house is viewed primarily as an extension of the wife more than the husband. Happens to be, whether it's good or bad in society, some want to change it. But in society, it's understood that more domestic duties happen to be cast upon the woman than on the man. And that's not only something which is true in secular society, that's true already the Masara for Dari Doris, that's the way things are. Which means, by definition, often the house is viewed as more of an extension of the wife than the husband. So it makes more sense that often a wife is more makbid on the house, the husband is a kacha, no one's coming tonight, who cares? Why does it make a difference if everything's all over the place? But often for a wife, it's important for her own sense of self, because the house is viewed as an extension of herself. Similar to the idea of looking at a midah, which is not so ideal, and trying to be makbid the good side and the bad side, all this is supposed to take place within the confines of one's own home. If a person is in public, then it's also possible for one person to display, one spouse to display, the midah, which is not necessarily so ideal, in a public setting. So how do we approach that in a public setting? Often, a person can outright criticize it. That Seichel Yashar tells us is not correct. But sometimes even a snicker, or just a snide, without saying anything, could be what the wife does if she sees her husband display that mitzvah. It also is not appropriate. Often people have dirty laundry, but as we know, dirty laundry does not belong where? In public. Even if it's something which is a midah, which is under discussion right then, no one else has to know about it. It's not something for other people to display. That's, they know what they know. And in general, it's not kedai to air one's dirty laundry in public. But not only in terms of a snicker. Sometimes, it can come out as a joke. Oh yeah, you know, he works so hard in yeshiva, he's so tired, it's hard for him to get, he's lucky if he even gets the 830 minyan on time. Okay, now, that might be an innocent remark, but no one else has to know that. That's not something that has to know. It might not be the best, the worst. I mean, the 830 minyan is not so different. Look, you know, it used to be in Mordor that was closed down, and now it's in Reuben. I remember those days when it used to be in Mordor, whatever. So, Lamaisa, it's not necessarily the best place to daven 830 minyan, but even if that's true, even if it's under discussion, no one else has any business knowing about it, even as a snide remark, even as a joke. First of all, no one else has to know. But as we mentioned last week also, jokes and also, when we mentioned last week that a person should not put himself or herself down. People should not put themselves down and say, oh, I'm such a klutz. Because often you'd have to believe it yourself, and then your spouse can believe it. But who is it here? Even jokes. There's no reason people have to hear jokes. Because many a true word is said in jest. Jest does not mean all of a sudden that people don't get insulted. And no one else has to know what's going on altogether. So it's important, even if people are working on midos, to let it go. They know, they not smoke. They know, they know. Not be something which is discussed, even in a joke, in public. One of the most important parts of marriage is not only the communication, not only the discussion, but the physical part of marriage. We know it's something that we learn in halacha, as well as in hashtafa. Connection between a husband and wife, sexual matters, are a very, very important part of any marriage. We know that our hashtafa is that a husband and wife being together is not only something which is for the purpose of peru revu. It's often, as we call it, in the most halachic sense, for the mitzvah of ona. Where Moshe Feinstein writes a very basic yesod in a tshuva that sexual matters are not only, usually we talk about the chiyuv of ona is from who? From husband to wife. Rav Moshe points out, no, ona is the chiyuv both from husband to wife and wife to husband. It's a relationship, and a relationship, both of them have the chiyuv. It happens to be that usually halacha is centering on the husband's chiyuv, male the husband's the one who's usually focused on in halacha. But Rav Moshe points out in the tshuva in Eben Ezra that it's davar pashut, that the chiyuv of ona is both from husband to wife and from wife to husband. The mitzvah of Tashrei Shemitah, being together, is vastly different in Klal Yisrael and in the secular world. The halacha is a very basic halacha, which the Shach quotes. In Shulchan Aruch it's quoted, but the Shach even seems to throw into other places which we might not have thought it applies. Halacha is, it's prohibited for a husband to bewail his wife when she's sleeping. Now one would say in theory, okay, kacha, what's the big deal? What's so bad about being bewailed his wife when he's sleeping? Well, however, that halacha shows a sea difference, a sea change in the approach that we have to marital relations and the secular world. The secular world views sexual matters as I. It's the gratification, the pleasure, the hana that a person can get himself or herself from another. But who's the focus? Me. Which is why there's such an idea of pritzos. Why you can have on television, on magazines, on the internet, pritzos. It's nothing to do with the person who you're focused on. It's all what I can take in for myself. It's all focused on I. Me'idach, Yisrael Kadoshim, the whole point of being together sexually is not for I, it's for the other. It's for the zulas. The whole point of being together is not focused on what I can gain out of it, but what the other person can gain out of it. Mamela, if one is in a situation where it's only going to be he that's deriving the benefit from the intercourse, then it's going to be a situation which is focused on him. That's taking the side of the Goyim, of the secular world, which is focusing on only what I can gain. The whole point of Klal Yisrael is that we focus on building a relationship, making the relationship deeper. If it's not a situation which has been making the relationship deeper, then it is not an appropriate forum for Tashrei Shemitah. So this halacha is not just a tucked away halacha, it's a halacha which seems to focus on what we stand for. We focus on the fact that the union between a husband and wife is not something which is what's in it for me, it's what's in it for her, what's in it for him. In fact, we know that the pitana in science we call orgasm, the pitana of sexual intercourse, is attained differently between husband and wife. And the Gemara tells us that hamisha atma bebeten, the Gemara says a husband who's more concerned about making his wife receive sexual pleasure more than himself, is zochet banim zacharim. The Gemara is driving home this exact point. The husband's job is to make sure that his wife derives pleasure, not that he derives pleasure. It's much easier sometimes for the husband to derive pleasure from the act rather than for his wife. And the point is, no, hamishah atma beten, a person who holds back his own pleasure, to make sure that his wife gets pleasure, he's zoche to have a reward, because he understands what Tashrei Shemitah is really all about. It's not about what I can gain, what about she can gain. That's what Chai Yisrael stands for. Many people make a mistake and think that sexual intercourse is part of marriage, and often it's such an important part of marriage it can compensate for communication, compensate for discussion, compensate for really understanding each other. It's not true. The beauty of the physical part of marriage is that it enhances the relationship. But if the relationship itself is on ice, if there are problems in the relationship, then being together doesn't enhance that. Being together can instead be a pitfall rather than a band-aid. There are some that advise a couple, because I heard someone who got married, they spoke to someone before they were married and told them, you know, there's a certain point in the relationship, there's tensions, but don't worry, after you're married, when you can have physical contact with each other, physical connection, then things will be smoothed over. In the opinion of many, that's terrible advice. That's not true. Intimacy is a way of enhancing a relationship, not a way of filling in blanks where gaps exist in a relationship. For example, reason number one is, even if it's true, even if it's somehow a person has some emotional block, cannot connect with his wife in a conversational way, he needs to have some sort of physical connection with his wife, that's only going to be a temporary solution. If there's really a problem, Hayitachin, all of a sudden, just physical contact is going to all of a sudden change the problem? That's tipshus. Obviously, if there's really a problem, the problem's going to be there, and today it's going to be covered up by physical connection, but then eventually it's going to resurge, it's going to resurface. So what do you do? Obviously, one can't always be together. If there's really a problem, the only way to resolve it is this communication. But similarly, not only will it not solve problems, it can sometimes make problems even worse. It can make things even more difficult. Because one of the most beautiful parts about the relationship, the kedusha between husband and wife, is that neither one feels like they're being taken advantage of. They're both contributing equally. If each one, ideally, she's focusing on him, he's focusing on her, then that's a way to build a relationship. But if the point is, let's say he's upset at her, and now he's using the physical connection, the physical pleasure, to assuage his being upset, or the other way around, then instead of being something which can really build a relationship, it's helping one person just cover over the problem that exists, which means the other person is being taken advantage of. So not only is the problem going to resurface, but each spouse can sometimes feel taken advantage of, which is very insulting. And that insult is much more powerful than words. If a person feels like he or she is being taken advantage of in sexual matters, then that means that they're exposing a very intimate part of themselves, and it's being taken for granted just for the other person. And that, Rahman al-Islam, can not only not help things, it can make things worse. Often, we know that the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Avos, Altar Besichet Im Isha, Apil Ishto, it might be something difficult for husband and wife to discuss sexual matters even amongst themselves. But communication, as in every aspect of marriage, is an essential part of anything working together. And just like in any other area of marriage, communication is important. It's very important for both the husband and wife to communicate their own needs. If a husband or wife feels that the sexual schedule is too infrequent or too frequent, if there's too much pressure, too little pressure, if anything is not correct, anything that's not balanced, it's essential that husband and wife discuss it with each other. It's not something to be embarrassed about. It's not something to feel shy about. Part of the beauty of marriage is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this tremendous bracha of the ability to physically connect. And that's something which has to be appreciated to the best that it can. If one thinks that there is a problem, it's important to be able to discuss with a third party. And here, even though we mentioned last week, sometimes one can discuss things with an older person who's married longer. In this situation, one should speak to a person who's a professional, either a Rav or a person who's a Seker professional. But it's very important for both husband and wife to feel that their sexual needs are met. That's something which is true not only psychologically, but al-pi hashkafas haTorah. That is, or else there is perhaps the physical kiyum of the mitzvah of Ona, but not the kiyum of Ona to the way that it should be. Commutation is very, 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 very essential. Also, without going into the details between the biology, the way a husband works, the way a man works, and the way a woman works, often it's easy for a husband to feel like he is achieving gratification more than his wife is. And that's an important thing for husbands to know, that should be something which is definitely addressed. The husband has a job, that's really the Gemara that talks about Meshah Atma Vetan, a person who holds back his own pleasure to make sure his wife gets pleasure. It's a very important thing for a husband to be more concerned that his wife gets pleasure, because it's much easier for a husband to get pleasure than his wife. If a wife doesn't want to speak about it, it's important for the husband to discuss it with his wife. And even if it can't be changed, the very fact that the husband has the hakara, the fact that he is taking her pleasure, her gratification into consideration itself, is an essential part of the sexual relationship. If the husband and wife don't know where to turn, then kol kavod, that's also a situation that should be discussed with a third party, a person who knows more about it. But step number one is just to acknowledge it, just to discuss between husband and wife, if the wife is getting as much pleasure as she should be from their relationship. When we talk about physical intimacy, of course, it doesn't only talk about sexual matters, but as the Shach points out, you don't need the Shach to point it out, an essential part of marriage is also chibuch v'nishuch, physical contact, aside from actual sexual intercourse, hugging, kissing. But some husbands might have a concern if being involved physically with their wife for tishu he'ever. Moshe Feinstein writes a tshuva, it might be an embarrassing thing to talk about, but Moshe writes that there are some husbands he knows about that do not want to have physical contact with their wife because they might have tishu he'ever. And we know a person is not allowed to be mekasha atzmo ladas, a person is not allowed to have an erection without having a purpose, without being boil his wife. So people were concerned, they didn't want to be sexually stimulated because they were going to have an erection. So Rav Moshe writes, he proves from a Rambam, proves from others, that it's mutter gadarmi. There's no isser of a person having kishui, a person having sexual stimulation when he is involved intimately with his wife. And in fact, Rav Moshe writes, I thought it's something which is so pashut. I can't imagine that there'd be people that were ruining their shalom bayis over this. I thought it's so pashut. I didn't even want to write this tshuva. But I have to write it because in case people might be concerned, you should just know there's nothing to be concerned about. Rav Moshe writes, Mutar Gadarmi, and of course, Kol Amar Bar is Meshubach. Kibbutz Menishuv is a very, very important part. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made man and woman is that it's natural for them to want to be together. And if they can't be together, it's important to show the bond, whether it's their first day of marriage or their first month of marriage, their first year of marriage, or the 20th year of marriage. To show the connection that they have physically is a very essential part of marriage. As Rav Moshe writes, one should not be concerned about Kishui, Shalom B'Shas Mitzvah. And Rav Shimon Eider quotes from Yaakov Kamenetsky in a footnote, not only that, but often we know, without getting into the details, that if a man has tishu ha'ever, he can sometimes be motzi a certain secretion. That's not really zera, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky writes. It's just some sort of moisture. That moisture, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky also writes, there's no iser be motzi that moisture. Zera, as the Gemara says, Shmuel says that kol zera, any zera that, which is not yorek ha'chetz, in a mazria. Zera means that it goes out with force, but some moisture that comes out, even though one might think it's zera, is not a concern to go out. So not only like Rav Moshe Feinstein with tishur, but even tishur with moisture is not a concern. It should not make a person chas v'shalom bimoneh from chibuk v'nishuk. Rav Yaakov Hennessy writes, he's not sure in terms of din tumah. Maybe a person's tummy or not with that moisture, he's not sure. He says suffik, but as far as iser tzav zera, the repasha, that one is not over, and therefore chibuk v'nishuk is a very, very essential part of marriage. That's never pashut, but it's just an important thing to chazer over, that the physical contact is something which is essential in marriage. Let's just save the questions for afterwards. part of the beauty of marriage is that not only does one get a new husband or a new wife, but one gets a whole new beautiful family with a new set of parents, new set of brothers-in-law sometimes, sisters-in-law sometimes, and that enhances one's experience in life and avodas Hashem. But also it can be a little bit complicated, because we know that family itself can be complicated. Toasting, if you now double the family, now there are more people involved in the family. It's not a coincidence that there's a no shortage of, in America, of mother-in-law jokes, because often having new people in the family, especially parents-in-law, can make things more tense, can make people hard to deal with. We know that, especially in today's society, it's hard for people to deal with their parents. If it's hard for people to deal with parents, toasting can be hard for people to deal with in-laws. And that's a normal thing to happen. Sometimes it can just be something which is a little bit hard to do. What do we do? How do people deal with in-laws? There are some of the problems that can exist with in-laws we're going to analyze now. Some of them we'll save for another time, Bezus Hashem. One yesod, when dealing with anyone outside the family, aside from husband and wife, whether it's your parents or her parents, is that, as we mentioned, every single marriage has disagreements. Disagreements can sometimes be heated. But imagine a couple that just got married 2 months ago. It's only normal when the wife gets very upset about something the husband does, who does she confide in? Her mother. Makes sense. That would seem normal. Shum panim ba'ofen no. When there are disagreements within the family unit, it has to stay within the family unit. And if it can't be resolved, then yasichen al-acher, and there are others to discuss it with, but not to discuss it with other members, such as parents or in-laws. For three reasons. Number one, parents have longer memories than kids do. Even if the matter is not resolved, when people are in a loving relationship themselves, then eventually they forget. Things get watered down, and kacha can be water under the bridge. But when parents are so concerned about their child, when she's so concerned about her daughter, then often the water is never under the bridge, the water is still a stain right in front of them. Which means they're looking at something skewed. Okay, he got really upset at her, she's really upset at him, and tomorrow it's over. But as far as the parents, it's still very vivid in the parents' memory. It can be the 20 years later. And it's not fair. It's not that you're trying to keep MS away from the parents. What's happening there is that the parents are getting a skewed version of what really went on. Similarly, imagine if the wife pulls up her mother and tries high time. She's very upset at what her husband does. Even if she's not upset, she just discusses very calmly, coolly, collectively, and she's trying to get her mother's advice. So she's crying for an hour to her mother on the phone. The next minute, her husband comes home and they talk. They really resolve it. So imagine what's going to happen. Is the daughter going to call up her mother and with his slav was explained for an hour again how the husband really ironed things out, how it went, now it's so benachas, Baruch Hashem, they have such a beautiful marriage. As we mentioned last week, the difference between a good marriage and a marriage which is on the rocks is not the existence of machlokas, it's what you do with it. How in a good marriage you can have machlokas and there can be a building block for, as is Hashem, for going further and growing in the marriage. So does she convey to her mother then how much they grew from that, and how they really understand each other now, and how Baruch Hashem they had that machlokas was really, it was a watershed in understanding each other? Even if she calls up and says, you know, Baruch Hashem, Shlomo now is not, we're not upset at each other anymore, and now there's Shlomo Yisrael, the eslavos that she had with the machlokas will not necessarily be conveyed in the same measure as the eslavos that will not be there when she explains about the reconciliation. Even if she says that it was reconciled, it will not necessarily be with the same eslavos that the original machlokas was approached with, which is what, which again, gives the mother, gives the father, gives the in-laws a skewed version of what's going on. Also, often we mentioned that part of the course is that Shana Rishona is not always so easy. Shana Rishona means that people have to try to grow together. And there can be a lot more bumps than usual in Shana Rishona than in other years. Rabbi Simon told me today, in the minute apropos to nothing, that he heard from someone who pointed out that he thought that in today's day and age, Shana Rishona lasts for 5 years. Because people are so tense, people are always so running, people are so busy, that you can't get adjusted to marriage in 1 year. It takes a long time to get adjusted to marriage. So however long Shana Rishona is, if it's Shana Rishona or Shana 5, when one is still building one's bias neman, there can sometimes be tensions. Sometimes people try to understand each other and are not necessarily as good at understanding each other than they're going to be later on in life. And if that's true, the husband and wife might realize that we're Shana Rishona, that's what happens. But sometimes the parents would forget what it's like. They think, oh, my son-in-law did that. He is such a husband who has so much to learn about marriage. And so it's the husband and wife that realize, okay, kacha, you know, got upset, but we're young. It's a growth experience. We learn. Let's assume it's not going to happen again. So the husband and wife and parents are coming from two totally different vantage points. When the husband and wife express it to the parents who think such a thing happened and they're looking from their years of 25 years of marriage, as opposed to the husband and wife who have 5 months of marriage, the parents can have a difficult time putting the shoes on of their young married couple. And they're coming at it from very different perspectives. Again, for this third reason, it's not that you're trying to shield the parents from the MS, it's just that even if they hear all the facts, they might have a skewed version of MS. They point out that there was a woman who married off her son, and she met her friend. She says, "No, how's it like? How's life? How's your son enjoy his marriage?" She says, "Oh, it's terrible. My daughter-in-law makes him wash the dishes, take out the garbage, serve breakfast in bed. Ayveh, she made him mamish into an eved." Okay. Then she says, "Yeah, by the way, I heard you have a daughter that got married recently. How's she doing?" "Oh, she's fantastic. The son feeds him like a princess. He brings her breakfast in bed every day, takes the garbage every morning, makes sure to wash the dishes every night before they go to sleep. Wow, unbelievable." Okay, perspective is an important part of MS and marriage too. So even if they hear the facts, they're not necessarily going to get an MS-like approach to really what's happening. Moving on, often parents or in-laws can exert themselves a little bit too strongly in a situation. We could call it interfering, although they're not trying to meddle, they're not trying to interfere. They love their daughter, they love their son very much, and they're trying to make things the best way that it can be in their marriage. But lemaisa, sometimes they can interfere a little too far. It's very important for each couple to set their own boundaries up, to make clear boundaries as to what is okay, what's not okay, where parents should exert their influence, where parents should not exert their influence. And without having a magic formula to find the balance between their own privacy, the couple's own privacy, the couple's own ability to make decisions, and the parents' input. There's no one right answer, but in every situation it's important to realize that's the balance that we're striving for. For example, a wife is now pregnant with her first child. So often, a wife can feel, hey, you know, if I don't tell my mother, she's going to be really insulted. So maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe you want to tell your mother because you want to get her advice. That's different. But if the wife feels the pressure to tell her mother because the mother's going to be very insulted, it's important for the wife to try to strive for a balance between, number one, telling my mother, and number two, now Baruch Hashem, we are our own family, we're our own unit. This is private information between me and my husband. It doesn't mean that the mother has to only find out when she's 6 months pregnant, but the idea, the pressure, the fact that the daughter feels such pressure, my mother's going to be insulted. If not, it's important for her to realize, well, she shouldn't be insulted. There's a beauty to you having your own relationship rather than running to tell your parents everything. Often, especially in our yeshiva, when people try to decide what they're going to be doing in life, we can have a situation in which the husband is not so sure what he wants to do in life. And it's very beautiful for parents or in-laws to try to express their desire, their advice, their hashpa, to what decision the person should make. And that's very beautiful, it's very important, but there has to be a point of ad kan v'sulo. It's important to give the advice. Chas v'shalom for a dor that does not ask etz tova from previous doros. That's a terrible thing, but it has to be within boundaries, within the norm. Sometimes it's important to say something to the extent, something like, you know, we appreciate your input very much. We're going to take it into consideration. We'll discuss it together. We'll keep you posted on our decision. Nothing wrong with driving home. That's a very mental way of driving home, the fact that it's our decision. Please realize that it's our decision, and we want advice from you. But I'll convey to the couple who lives because their parents are putting pressure. Even if the parents are not doing it lishma, parents are not trying to put pressure on the couple. But if the pressure is felt, even if it's because the couple puts it on themselves because of the parents, that itself is not healthy either. Boundaries are very, very important. Where should they live? Should we live here? Should we live there? Should we live near these parents? Live near these parents? Well, I feel that this is not right to them. It's important to realize that decisions have to be made in order of what's best for the couple first, and then what's best for the parents. Not chas v'shalom to undermine the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim, but in terms of growing healthily together, growing a happy marriage, it's important to make sure that boundaries are kept, that parents are involved, but only to a point. Sometimes parents can be demanding. Again, they're not trying to exert their influence and demand certain things of husband or wife, but they have certain needs. For example, the parents want their children to come to the 50th anniversary party of the great uncle. But at the same time, the husband has a bechina tomorrow in the kollel, since everyone made sure to take kollel bechinas on time. So the husband has a bechina tomorrow in the kollel, he doesn't want to miss it. And the parents are very demanding that the person come. The point of tonight's discussion is not who's right and who's wrong, but what's important is to realize that the parents' demands should be met if they can be. Kibud av v'aim, but people have to know where to draw boundaries. Kibud av v'aim is a mitzvah which is very important to remember, and it's sometimes a hard mitzvah. But that doesn't mean that it's a mitzvah which can ever be forgotten about chas v'shalom. On the other hand, it's important to remember that there are sometimes that kibud av v'aim is not going to be able to dictate what's right and wrong in the situation. And if a couple feels that they're being squelched, they're not being able to express themselves, they're not being able to really be who they are, and there are too many demands being placed on them, there are a few ways to deal with it. Number one, sometimes do nothing. Choose your battles itself is important. Not every demand that's placed should be replied no. Sometimes demands, even if you think they're silly, even if it's not something which you'd ideally like to do, like in any situation of family, it's important sometimes to say, okay, you know, it's worthwhile to do that, give in to that demand, because I like to give in to some things, and it's better to give in to this one when next time I won't be able to give in to it. Not only just it's good as a tactic, aha, I'll give in to this one, this way they know that I did this one, then next time, aha, I want to give in to the next one, but chachma, if you can do kibud av v'aim, why not do kibud av v'aim? On the other hand, if you give in to everyone, that's terrible. That means you become a shmata. So it's important to draw the boundaries between knowing when to give in and knowing when to say, okay, we're not going to give in here. But it's important to know that one can give in sometimes. But number two, essential in any situation, whether it's the first issue of differences of opinion, number two, interfering, or number three, demanding, when we deal with parents, it's essential that everything presented to parents be with the united front. Meaning, even if in that situation of the 50th anniversary, the wife thought, of course you should go to the 50th anniversary party with my great-great uncle and an aunt if it's an anniversary. And the husband says, are you kidding? Of course I should be in yeshiva. It's ridiculous. How can I not be in yeshiva? That's absurd. Whatever they discuss inside their house in Washington Heights should not leave the house in Washington Heights. When they present it to their parents, it has to be with a united front. It has to be that we decided X or we decided Y. Because if they do it, oh, you know, I really want to come to the 50th anniversary party, but Yanko doesn't want to come because he wants to be in Kollel Seder. Then all that does, that doesn't only make the problem as far as the 50th anniversary, that makes it a problem in the marriage. And that's exactly number one problem here. Number two, that's giving you disagreements to your parents or to your in-laws. Well, yes, it came from Kameinu. That is not prudent. Even if the husband and wife have different approaches to it, at least qua them, qua everyone else, it should be something which is presented unitedly. It should be something which is presented in a united fashion, something which is presented to everyone as one. Often that's not so easy. Imagine, the wife really thinks the husband should go to the anniversary party, and the husband thinks he really should stay in yeshiva. He's done so many anniversary parties, and he knows they're all boring. No one's going to notice if he's there or not. So the decision is irrelevant, but it has to be something that they decide together. How could the husband decide it and concede to the wife? How can the wife concede to the husband? Often, in a discussion, it should be something which is discussed by using a mashal. It's sometimes helpful for the husband to say to his wife, you know, imagine if the situation was like this. Let's say we had a 50th anniversary party of my great-great Aunt Shprinza that you don't really know, and there was a shower of your really close friend that you had on the same day. And they could discuss it, meaning helping Lasaberis Ozen, helping them understand what's going on, to understand it in their own situation. Basher Husham is often a very important technique, helping them realize the way things should be discussed. But number two, have an oral discussion. As we mentioned last week a little bit, in marriage, it's important to discuss. And discussion has several different aspects. Number one, the husband or the wife sit down and discuss it, and each one listens. Discussion doesn't only mean talking. Husband tells wife what he thinks. Pause, listen. Don't respond, just listen. Listening itself is a very important learning technique. Number two, wife can tell husband what she thinks. They can discuss it. But it's very, very important, no matter how crazy you think the other person's opinion is, to listen. Not only because then you're going to really understand what they're saying, but to show that you're listening, to show that you can comprehend, to show that you can understand what they're saying, is a very, very important. So they point out often in the... I remember when I was in the Smicha classes, we had Robert A. Bush, who was Bucky in conflict resolution. One of the things he teaches people when they try to resolve conflict is that you have to reflect. He says this, you and I are in a big conflict, so you tell me what you think. Before I even say anything, I reflect. What I hear you saying is XYZ. To make sure the person understands that you heard them, even if you don't agree. Now in marriage, that might be something which is nice to do, even if you don't do it that formally, but the point of making sure that you're heard, making sure that the other person is listened to itself, is a very, very essential thing in marriage. So here as well, in order to present a united front, it's necessary for the husband and wife to make sure to discuss things. Not only to use role play, to use a mashal to try and make sure it was sabres ozen, but to really listen to each person and come, however it is, with a united front to suggest to everyone else. And when that united front is presented, still it shouldn't be said, well, you know, Yanko decided that he's not going to come to the thing because he decided this. Rather than say, Yanko decided, it's, we decided that I'm going to come to the 15th anniversary party, but Yanko's not going to come because he has to stay in yeshiva. And we think it's very important for Yanko to be able to be in yeshiva. Now he's not going to be in yeshiva that much longer. It's very important for him to be in yeshiva. We. Because we have to present a united front. We made a decision together, even though she thought it was terrible. But Lamaisa, once they decided, and they can present something united to everyone else. One of the issues that often comes up with parents and in-laws is the idea of yontif. We know that Simchas Yontif perhaps is a difficult mitzvah when people have to be misdaber with that. They don't want to be where they are for Yontif altogether because they had to decide, and she said it was his turn, she said it was it. Everyone tried to decide where they should be, this in-laws, that in-laws. They were there really for 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. 2 days of Rosh Hashanah really counts as 4 days because you're in shul much longer, so really therefore you did both the first days and last days of Sukkot, all the cheshbonos. The ideal is to be, for Yontif to be even, if you can, try to keep it even. And with that said, it's important, even though it's even, each spouse's job is to make sure it's not a big deal for the other spouse. It's each spouse's job to say, you know what? Okay, kacha didn't work out so well. Often spouses feel that they're the lawyers for their family. Meaning, I'm the lawyer for my parents, I have to make sure that we come to our house X times of the year. And she's the lawyer for her parents, make sure that we go to there, and we're gonna lock horns in the court of our living room to make sure that everything's even Steven. That also should not be done. No one's job is the defense attorney. It's important that each spouse be interested in Yashar V'Tov. That the wife, if she can, bend over backwards to make sure the husband's family gets what they should. The husband bends over backwards to make sure the wife's family gets what they should. Because each situation can be, even if you're trying to make it even, can be viewed in many different ways. But if each spouse views it as that they're the lawyers trying to make sure this is what's happening, then often that can be hazardous to your health. Rather, it's important to try to make sure it's equitable, but don't be lawyers. You're not trying to make this even. Nothing can ever be even. There's not enough Yom Tov in a calendar year that everything should be exactly even. Things change, things are different, there are always certain scenarios. The ideal of the couple is that they should work as a couple, trying to make sure that things work out the erech the way they can. And when it's decided, for whatever reason, then it's important to tell whichever side is the losing side. We decided, you know, this time we shouldn't come for Hashanah, we want to be in yeshiva. We want to be in yeshiva. This time we shouldn't come for Sukkos. We think it's good to go to everyone else. You were there last year, so okay, but we decided, you know, we spoke it over, we thought it's good this time. We. No one has no details. It doesn't make a difference. If you try to explain the cheshbonos to them, it doesn't necessarily mean that parents and in-laws are going to like it better. And similarly, it's important to make sure that the we is there. Both of us decided the way things should be. Again, to make sure that no one, that each spouse bends over backwards, that it's not a situation in which they're defending, but they're trying to figure out objectively what's the most yashar, what's the most tough. One other point is that if there are issues in terms of where one should spend yontif, The one time not to discuss it is on Erev Yontif. The husband decides we're going to my family for the first day of Sukkot. Then the wife really is upset, but she doesn't make a big deal. And then as she's packing Erev Yontif, she says, it's not fair. We've gone to your parents for 4 years straight every Erev Sukkot. Okay, if that was really a problem, then discuss it sometime. But nachas, when everything is rushed, then all it's going to do is make Simchas Yontif worse or take away Simchas Yontif. It's not going to help anything. All it does is build resentment and build some sort of block in communication. If there's an issue, it's an issue that should be discussed when it's not something which is omen el aperet. If it's omen el aperet, that is not discussed, our kosher to discuss it. Too late. Discuss it sometime benachas, discuss it maybe even after Yontif, and explain, it really bothered me. But to discuss it when things are tense, when it's Erev Yontif, does much more harm than good. Moving on to the next topic. What about Night Seder? Night Seder Shana Rishona, Night Seder Shana 10, Night Seder Shana 20. Does the husband belong to Night Seder? His wife works so hard. By the time they're 20 years married, there'll be kids running over in the apartment in Washington Heights. There's still kids that are wherever they are. The kids are grown and there are a lot of needs. Baruch Hashem, Tzarech Anchem Rubim. So what happens if wherever they are, the husband wants to go Night Seder and he's leaving the house in havoc? Should he really do that? Or they just got married for 6 months. Shana Rishona. And she works hard every day. She barely gets to see him. She forgets his name. And he runs out at 8 o'clock at night. He runs out punctually till 10 o'clock. By 10 o'clock, she is zonk. She has to wake up 5 o'clock in the morning after she has to go to work the next day. So how are they ever going to build a marriage? He's a night sitter. Is that true or is that not true? But what do you mean? How do you build a marriage? How do you build a Talmud Chacham? He's going to sit night sitter every night? Chas v'sholom. There's no right answer. But Labasi El Lahair, one Sudan, one approach that should be taken in that situation. The husband's job is to be focused on his wife's needs as much as he can. Me'idach, the wife's job is to be focused on his needs as much as she can. If that's really true, they're both focused on each other's needs, then there's some happy medium, some balance which is going to be drawn. It's not going to be the same balance in Shona Rishona as in year 10, but if the approach is that he wants to do what's best for her, and she ideally wants to do what's best for him, then she's going to push him to Beis Medrash and he's going to want to stay home. And if she pushes him to Beis Medrash eventually, that means he should be in Beis Medrash. But if she pushes him to Beis Medrash, and one time he says, I think it's too hectic, I don't think I should go, and she says, Taka, you're right, that means he knows that night he does not belong in Beis Medrash. He knows that things are too hectic and he shouldn't go. But if the approach is she's really trying to do what's best for him, he's trying to do what's best for her, then often, happy medium, whatever it is, whether it means no night sitter for a few weeks or night sitter every night for a few weeks, can be reached because it's mutual. And perhaps the most important thing is to make sure that the agreement is mutual. Obviously, everything takes sacrifice. For her working the whole day takes sacrifice also. But obviously, that's a haskama that they believe is something which is necessary. The idea of the haskama, mutual agreement, is something which is essential in a marriage. And then it's not that she's being moser nefesh. We're being moser nefesh. He wants to see me, I want to see her, but we're being moser nefesh, you should be a night sitter. And sometimes, we're being moser nefesh, I should be home, making sure to do domestic duties. But perhaps the most important point is that it should be something which is discussed together, which each spouse, again, bending over backwards for the other spouse's needs, rather than for their own needs. It's not his job to be the mashgiach of the house, her job to make sure that she's the person who's the superintendent, make sure all the domestic duties are taken care of. If I care, each spouse's job is to make sure that whatever is best for the other spouse is done, and with that approach, whether they decide that he should never be a night sitter or always be a night sitter, it can be with a decision which is with equanimity and benachas and shchina shuri b'neihem. Also, it's important to keep in mind, as far as night sitter is concerned, that they say the story that there was once, we're coming to the time of Kol Nidre, there was once a Rebbe who came, they put different peoples into the story, but a Rebbe who came late, the whole Tzibur was waiting for Kol Nidre. They're waiting, they want to start, as we know in Shulchan Aruch, it says you start Kol Nidre when it's still day. They want to make Machri, like Rav Shechter Klotz in Brisk, they had, in Chaslavich maybe, they had an hour of Tosefet Yom Kippur, half hour for Yisra Malacha, half hour for Yisra Inui. They want to start an hour before the Yom Kippur, and they're waiting. Imagine the Bristers waiting. Then we have to start an hour before Kol Nidre, we have to start an hour before Shtiyah, and no Kol Nidre. The Rav is not there, the Rebbe is not there. They can't start Kol Nidre till time is clicking, ticking, 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 and still no Kol Nidre. The Rebbe is not there. Till a few minutes before Shtiyah, Rebbe walks in and says, I'm sorry, listen, Rebbe Osai, I know it's important to see where the Sefer Nidre, but as I was going, I saw Nebuch, a woman who was home by herself with five kids screaming, they had to be put to bed, and they were just, they were overwhelmed, it was so late, and I just had to help her. How could I go face HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Kol Nidre with this poor woman having her hands full? I could walk away from such a situation. The new Rebbe Yid, who is this woman? My wife. Perhaps it's a joke, but it's a very, very true yisod. Often we say chesed starts at the home. So usually we say chesed starts at the home, meaning it's important to be mechanech children with chesed. But chesed starts at the home. It's important to be makir, that if for someone else's wife, it's very easy. Oh yeah, I can take an hour night seder. My friend is moving, of course. I have night seder, but he's moving into the apartment. Can you imagine, he never moved into the apartment before he comes back from Brussels last year. His svarim are all in the hall. I have to help him take the svarim up. Avadi, you have to help your friend to take the svarim up if you think you have to. But certainly you have to help your wife take the svarim up. Chesed starts at the home. Very, very important yisod, never to forget. The quote Rav Yo Solomon said, apparently, that one of the worst things they do in seminary is they teach women that they have to daven. Because, whether it's true or not, the yisod is very true. We know that the reason that we have mitzvah asei shalos, that women are pturos from mitzvah asei shalos and rama, is because they have domestic duties. Baruch Hashem, they have a house to take care of, they have children to take care of. That's why the Rishonim tell us that perhaps the time of the Torah, the reason women are pturos from mitzvah asei shalos and rama. So if a woman is all harried and she doesn't have a minute to breathe during the whole day and she complains at night, you know, I couldn't even daven. So apisecha yosho, husband's Rishonim should be Baruch Hashem. That's why you're not supposed to daven. That's the whole point. But a word of advice. Sometimes it's important to know that when a woman needs to daven, it's not only because she thinks there's a chiv and she was taught in seminary that she's supposed to daven. Often, davening serves two purposes as well. For a woman, Baruch Hashem, in today's day and age, when women are educated, women are involved in shiurim, women are involved much more than ever before in real hands-on Yiddish type. And if that's so, there's a vacuum that can exist when a wife is involved in the affairs of the home the entire day and has no connection to Ruchnius. Even though her husband's in Powell, and that's by definition an extension to Ruchnius. She's a Karas Avayas for that. But Maisa, if she's not in any way connected to Ruchnius, it can be a very hard feeling for the wife, especially in today's day and age. So the davening then might not be davening mitzad davening. But the davening is important just mitzad letting the wife have a few minutes of Ruchnius connection. And that itself is important. So you're right, Rabbi Matzio Salman is right. She shouldn't daven mitzad davening. She's totally putter. And Avada, that's why she's putter. But still, it's important for her to have this connection, because that's today's women often need that, a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That woman's to die. So it's important for her husband not to minimize it, and to realize that that itself is enough of a reason for a wife to daven. Also, something that's just important for the wife to have a few minutes just to be able to be reflective, to focus on what she's doing, to focus not only on her religious connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but davening, we know, is a situation which helps a person be able to shabalei, helps a person realize Chalasa Ba'alamo. And if the husband is learning Torah the whole day, and as Rechaim Volozhin points out, it's not Bittul Torah for a person to stop in the middle of learning and think, wow, think of the Zuchus, I have to learn Torah Hashem. That's not Bittul Torah, that's part of what Tama Torah is, Beifas Hashem. Who adin, for the wife to have that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whether it's the davening per se, that was the first part, or just the idea of being able to be misboning a little bit, what she's doing in a very busy day, for that alone it's to die. So again, even if mitzad halacha, she's Ptura, there are other reasons to say that it's very important for a husband to be helping his wife have some time to daven. As we mentioned, marriage is a growth situation. A situation of growth, a situation that people are changing, ever moving, ever adjusting, ever growing. And sometimes it's possible to have one spouse be more frum than the other spouse. Not necessarily in a major way, but in little ways. How do we deal with that? How does that help impact the marriage? Step number one is to understand where the phenomenon comes from. What makes the husband more intense, the wife more involved, the wife now, the person who's more of a balas, aliyah, than the husband, or the other way around? Is it exposure to certain influences? If it's true that it's because of exposure to certain influences, then try having the other spouse exposed to those influences. If the husband now is more of a ben aliyah than his wife, let the wife be exposed to some of those influences that made the husband more of a ben aliyah. See what happens. If it's only a matter of education, matter of exposure, let the wife have those exposures as well, and see what can happen. They point out that in any relationship of two people, there are two ways that things can happen, two ways to help one person help another person grow. One can either pull or push. Pushing means I'm with you and I'm giving you chizuk, and pulling means I'm up here and I'm just pulling you up. But derech klal, pulling does not work. They point out there's a story once of a Baal Teshuva who was himself already a devout Jew. He was a full Baal Teshuva. And he was dating a girl who was somewhere in the middle. She was getting firmer. And then things went sour, they didn't work out. So she decided to take all her stuff and walk out into the street on Shabbos, which is when they broke up. She took all her stuff with her. So he screamed out to her, "Wait, there's no Eruv." Her response was, "It doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter anymore." Meaning, even though she was becoming more frum, what was the motivation for becoming more frum? Him. It wasn't an intrinsic connection to Yiddishkeit, to frumkeit. It was that she wanted to be connected to him, ergo, therefore she became more from herself. That's often what happens with pulling. If he's in a certain place and he's pulling her, then often it can be the external shell that's pulled, but it's not really the person's own desire. So if one exposes one's spouse to the influences and the person also has their own Isra Usta de Vasata, their own Isra Usta to do it, that's great. But if it's pulling because, oh, I heard this and therefore I want to do this, but the spouse is not really with it, then it could be Libi Mizrach Vanim Asof Mayru. Often in general, we pointed out that pressure never works. One of the worst things in a marriage is to exert pressure. Pressure often can make a person do something. A dog has pressure. A dog sits. A dog stands when you tell them, but there's no ratzon. In a marriage, you need to have ratzon, not just pressure. You're not looking for the actions, you're looking for the lave. If there's no lave, then things don't work. If it's true that a husband and wife are slightly different madreiros, then it means that in all probability, when they got married, they were holding around a similar place. If that's true, then appreciate the phenomenon. The husband shouldn't turn his back on what he was a few days, a few weeks, a few years ago. In all probability, they didn't get married when they were in totally different planes of existence. They were somewhat similar and someone grew. So just realize that itself, the hakara of the fact that, yeah, now I have a growth spurt and she didn't. Okay, but think where you were before the growth spurt and don't look down on the way that she still is now. Often it's important to, one of the ways to resolve issues in misaligned frumkeit is to agree to a certain third party, to agree to a rav that both parties feel comfortable with to ask shilos to. And therefore it's not the husband deciding that his wife should cover her hair more, or the wife deciding that she is more machmir on a certain thing. You ask the rav says yes, yes, the rav says no, no. If they're halachic matters, then it's important to pick a third party, a rav that you can discuss things with in confidence, who you can actually have his chavis das on. And then it's not based upon the husband's subjective view and the wife's subjective view, it's based on the rav, and it's much easier to look at things objectively. There's a specific area of halacha, which often there could be, with two from people, there can be slight disparity in the way they view things. Taras HaMishpacha often is a situation, my wife always points out when she gives Talmud classes, that the in Taras HaMishpacha, the phenomenon usually is the wife is the most machmir, the husband's a little bit more mekel, and the rav is the most mekel. Just usually a psychological phenomenon that happens. Whether it's just because people don't really know what they're doing, and therefore the rav is the only one that knows what they're doing, the husband knows a little bit more, so he's a little bit more mekel, and the wife knows less, so she's the most machmir. Or it's for some other reason, like sometimes women feel, this is dari daros, I want to be machmir. It's a few days of chumrah, but imagine I'm affecting Kali Yisrael for hundreds of years. And the husband feels like, what are you being so emotional for? And the rav looks at it as shuf halacha, whatever the reason is for it. But ma'isa, often it's an interesting phenomenon. Try it at home. The wife is the most machmir, husband is in between, and the rav is the most meitel. So in such a situation, it's important to realize the phenomenon that exists, number one. It's not more from, less from, it's just a phenomenon across the board. And number two, to have a rav. To have a rav you can turn to realize he should be the chasav shlishi machriya, that it's not more from, less from. You have a psak, psak is azoy, psak is yes, psak is no. And keep that psak, it stands in very good stead in the future. But number one, acknowledge the phenomenon. Number two, make sure to ask shilas, because it's not a matter of less from and more from, it's a matter of strict halacha. And it's important to have a mar hara to keep that halacha. Asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, Rashi points out, b'chol yom yiyu b'einacha t'chadashim. Divrei Torah should be with a certain hischadshus every day, whether it's the first day of the yeshiva after Rosh Hashanah, or it's Erev Rosh Hashanah, it should always be with Hischachus, Asher Anochi Misavcha Hayom. And it's not only true for Torah Hashem, it's true likewise for marriage. Marriage is something which always has to have a certain Hischachus. If a marriage is going to get older, if instead of being like wine that deepens with age and has a Hischachus, a certain fineness, instead it atrophies, that's a terrible color. It's important to preserve the newness, the excitement, the Hischachus of marriage. Someone pointed out to me from Rav Moshe Meir Weiss, very apropos to Aseres Mishuva, that points out, we live in very busy times, and it's almost impossible to make time in our schedule to do anything. But there's one thing that yearly people do, no matter what. Every year, at least in New York, no matter how busy you are, every single person who owns a car makes sure to get his car inspected. No matter what. If you don't, you get a knas. And then make sure everyone does it. I am busy, so take a half day from work if you have to. Everyone gets the car inspected. It just happens. When you know it's time for inspection, you make sure to do it. He was pointing out, with Aseres Mei Tshuva, we're all very busy. And every person, oh no, he's not really busy. I'm really busy, because I'm really doing important things. Everyone's always more busy than everyone else. We're always very busy. But if you need to do something, you need to get your car inspected, you make time. When you need to get your nefesh inspected, when you have the final exams coming, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, a person should make sure, okay, car is inspected, I'm Vatel's man, I know, I can clear my schedule, I make sure to eat out time to do it. Just like that's true, it's also true with a marriage. In order to keep a marriage with this chadshus, with developing like wine, and having an added depth, day by day, year by year, it's important to be tovei itim, to make sure no matter what happens, it's important to have the inspections, to have time to spend together, time to discuss things, time to make sure no matter how heavy the schedule is, time to help and reflect, time to build a marriage. Similarly, whether a person is married for 1 day, or 1 week, or 1 year, or 20 years, or 50 years, just like we mentioned that physical intimacy is an important part of marriage, so too the idea of saying I love you, expressing oneself, is an important part of marriage. It sounds trite. What do you mean? Obviously I love her, or else I would not still be married to her. I loved her yesterday, can I change today? But constant reminder is something which is necessary. It's not that we need it because there's a doubt. I love you is not expressing the Matzias. Obviously the Matzias is there. You have the chasna put your hand on the wall, Baruch Hashem. Obviously everyone knows that you love each other, else you wouldn't be married. But the Hischachus, the idea of freshness, the idea of that I love you now, the idea of something which exists constantly, which is constantly growing, is a very important thing to express. They point out that there's a discussion in the post-it, where Eider writes that one should not say I love you during times that a wife is Anida, but they point out that maybe that's true in the society or in the times that he wrote it, in the 70s when he wrote Hilchos Nida, but in today's day and age, I love you is not something which is so intimate. That's a normal course of events. If that's true, then Alchus Kama V'Kama, it's a word which has to be used in marriage very often. It's something which is never doubted, Chas V'Shalom, but important to always be mechazikin. Important not only chibuch v'nishuch that we mentioned before, but just verbal expression of how much each spouse loves each other, how much they appreciate, how much they acknowledge what you noticed you did for me today. I really appreciate that. It's not only Shana Rishona or Yom Rishon or setting the building blocks for a new marriage. It's true for every marriage. One should never forget to appreciate. One should never forget to always show that you have tremendous feelings for your spouse. And the last thing, Ray Willard often points out that dates are an important part of marriage. Dates could mean going for ice cream in an ice cream store, or dates could mean doing things together, or dates could mean in your living room being able to discuss things. You don't necessarily need a change of scenery. Baruch Hashem, there's no Yisur Yichud. You don't need to go to some Starbucks and have a date. Could be you have a date in your living room. But to be Kaveh Azman, to make sure whether it's a sit-in or a less yeshivish going out date, whatever the point is, less chasidish, going out date, Tzad HaShaveh, that has to be time that you set aside to have dates. Dates are a very, very important part of this chadshus. Chas v'shalom should be the dating is only to decide who you marry, and then it should fizzle out. Because dating is an important part of helping a marriage grow. Not only this chadshus of the first days, the first weeks, the first months, the first years, but with an ever-deepening appreciation of the marriage. We know that Shlomo Melech uses the marriage between connection between a husband and wife in Shir Shirim is perhaps the highest paradigm, Kadosh HaKadoshim, to express the connection we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shem Yizolcha, during these days of Dir Shoshem B'Yimotzo, to not only work on our Shalom Bayis and Yizolcha to build a Bayis Neman L'Hashem L'Tarasso, but likewise, Yizolcha to have the paradigm of our Shalom Bayis perfecting Veiches Hashem that we should all have. We should be all zocher Be'ez Hashem be together in Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh Kol Dodi Hinei Zeba Kein Yiratzon. Any questions? Are you want to ask a question? By the way, if anyone has questions, if you want, if you can't find me, you can also chat by email, maybrook@yu. It's easier. maybrooch at yu.edu. If anyone thinks of anything they want to schmooze
with. Dating, is there a specific... I guess, is there something that's considered less excessive, more excessive? Like, somebody else told me that, you know, when they were Shari Shona, they used to go out every single week. So, to me, it sounds very excessive. Because I felt like, well, you know what? Maybe in that person's situation, maybe they didn't have Shabbos or whatever it was. Oh, I say that Shabbos, but I'm saying they, for whatever reason, they weren't, maybe their Shabbos weren't as peaceful. So, like, is it shy that, like, you know, going out once a month would be more reasonable if, the, let's say, Shabbos was, like, would Shabbos?
It's possible. It's very hard to give one specific time. But it's important to be discussed together. Like I mentioned, many other things to be discussed. Each one should be more makbid for the other one. Meaning the husband should be willing to be mevater and his night seder if his wife thinks necessary, as long as he trusts his wife that she would say, you know, I don't think it's necessary, I think you can be learning. But it's important to definitely put the time in. One yisod is that whatever investment in the short term put in, more of bitul tara, whatever more time put in the short term, pays off in the long term. In yeshiva, in many yeshivas, the minute is that for the first Shana Yishana, Chassan does not go to Beis Medrash at all at night. That's the Rav Pasha, not even an issue of night seder. In our yeshiva, things sometimes are different. There's no right or wrong, but the point is, often, whatever investment one puts in can have payback. So it might be the right thing to go out once a week. On the other hand, you say you have Shabbos, or we don't go out for Hashem, things are relaxed, 10 o'clock from 10 to 12, we can be shmuzin every night, we don't need to go on dates and we've got the night seder for it. Fine, that's great. But the most important you start is that it should be something which is discussed between them to try to report on their both their needs. And my yisod would be it's better to err on the side of portion, better to err on the side of more rather than less, and then try to work back. Because if you are too concerned about being in Beis Medrash and then you're not going to be in the situation of being dating, then that could be viewed as not necessarily wanting to be involved, as opposed to if you first sort of lower and you try to move positive maybe it's better, that can always be adjusted the other way. Straya.
Tomorrow at 8:30.
In where?
Shaka's apartment. 490, apartment 3C.
Very nice. Some of the Straya. Thank you. Some of the issues that we discussed in my house will repeat over. So of all those that have wives, some of the things my wife's going to say over, other things she's going to add her own. Even though we prepared both ideas somewhat together.
Appreciate very much, by the way. Especially the physical intimacy, just because in custom classes they seem to cover everything. But
yes, that's very true. There's a lot more to say also.
In terms of tumah.
Yeah.
I mean, how much?
So right. So what about that's big issues? What about Rosh Hashanah? Let's say what about Rosh Hashanah? Where you're Rosh Hashanah tov to miscarry.
Right.
So Riyatam is a suffix. So I would presume that there's no fear for machmir in the suffix. Because on Azeh, when the whole idea is that there's no real fear, there's no real issue to him on Azeh. So if one Bez Hashem, Tish be Yataritz, when it's Nodeya for Kachim, let's tell you another Bez Hashem.
In general, we're not.
Right. It's not. We're not machmir. The only time we're machmir on Tumah is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The middle of the Tov is for Kerry, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Usually we're not machmir unless you can see the Tumah is Ezra, the meaning before Davin. We're not usually machmir on that anyway. First, the Tumah is Dero, the before Davin anyway. When they're Tumah, you're Tumah. They always go every month. So it's not really Nodeya any other time. So meaning that's only a suffix, yeah. So
if he was there, it's definitely
a Mr. Mayfield. The only time it's the day is Mr. Mayfield.
Right. We all go anyway.
Sure. This is a little quicker than the other time. It was a little more Hamish. Sure. You're simple, isn't it?
Oh, you're out of time, so yeah.
I'll just use this MP3. No.